All right. Well, let's start with what is your musical background?
I've been pretty much doing some kind of music all my life. Grew up playing violin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of from a classical point of
view. Right. Exactly.
Got interested in five-string banjo as a teenager and guitar, and played a lot of sort of folk and folk rock music. Went to college. I went to Harvard to be a physics major, and I switched to music. In my sophomore year, had a severe case of sophomore slump and realized that I really wanted to be, you know, doing music rather than writing equations. And probably the deciding moment was when I was doing a physics problem set, and at the time Yo-Yo Ma was a resident tutor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was having a concert below. Now, this is before anybody'd heard of him.
Right.
And, you know, and people were saying, because I'm an old guy, and people were saying, this guy is, you know, you haven't heard of him yet, but he's going to be the best cellist in the world, right? And he was giving a free concert right under my feet, and I was sweating too much on this problem set to go down two flights of stairs to check him out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that led to kind of a re-examination of my priorities. So, yeah, I studied, you know, sort of composition from the Western, you know, point of view as an mm-hmm. undergraduate. I have had a job since then that I've either been involved with sort of music technology or actual music, you know, played in a lot of bands and stuff mm-hmm. like that. I play electric violin well, a lot of other things that I just kind of play,
mm-hmm.
and that's pretty much, I guess that kind of sums it up.
Okay. So what first inspired you to write game music?
A buddy of mine who was a schoolmate and a bandmate named Michael Land
mm-hmm.
had gone out to study electronic music at Mills, and after he was done with that, he came back to work at Lexicon with me for a while. Lexicon, you may or may not know of, they make reverb units and stuff like that.
Oh, yes.
And I was doing software for them at the time. That was sort of my first real job after I was kind of tired of being a gardener and a musician. So I decided to be a programmer and a musician. And, Michael came out here, and he got an opportunity to essentially start a department at LucasArts.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed people that had some technical facility and also who could compose and actually, in those days, there weren't a lot of people who had, you know, a certain level of accomplishment in both those areas, and you know, so I had kind of the technical background, but I was also a trained musician, and that's, you know, so he pretty much called me up, and he also told me about this system that he was working on that had to do with interactive music.
Mm-hmm.
That sounded like a very interesting problem, and it sounded like once the system would be done, it sounded like a very interesting type of composition that we'd end up doing.
Right.
With, you know, once that system was finished. And of course the system turned out, it was called the iMuse system.
Mm-hmm.
It turned out to be quite a bit bigger project than I think either of us had anticipated, but it did. It was a worthy one, and it you know, was a great opportunity to do some you know, I guess pretty cutting edge stuff in the world of what's now called adaptive music, which I still like to call interactive music.
Mm-hmm. So now you are credited as the co-creator of the interactive music system called iMuse.
Yeah, that's right.
And so can you explain to those that may not know exactly what it is, actually what iMuse is?
iMuse is essentially a system which was first developed for MIDI engines in games,
mm-hmm.
and was later expanded to cover digital audio. And what it essentially does is it mediates between what the music wants to do and what the action in the game is saying that it should do,
mm-hmm.
so that you get changing music that is both musical and appropriate for the action of the game. There are a lot of systems out there now that do that very well. You know, we were sort of on the pioneer trail in those days, but you know, certainly Microsoft's Exact system comes to mind. That's mm-hmm. a pretty good one, and there are a number of others. But essentially, what these systems do is they look at they take cues from what's going on in the game, and then they make musical transitions or, you know, sort of crossfades or things, or they take some kind of action which will change what music file is playing, but they do it in an intelligent manner that the composer and programmers have set up in advance.
Is iMuse still in use today, or is it?
No, I'm not. I don't work for LucasArts anymore. I left in 2000.
Yes.
I don't think it is, but I'm not sure. You know, they may use it for some things these days.
Okay.
But you know, when we left, I think they used it less after we left there. You know, it's hard to keep a system going without the parents.
That's true. Okay. So what's the first thing you do when you begin to write a game score?
First thing I do is I ask for as much art as I can get, and as many story documents as I can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, screenshots are definitely a big component of that whole scene. There's really two main things that you're thinking about. You're thinking about characters and places.
Mm-hmm.
What sets the sort of mood or style of the music is usually more the place than the character, I would say. But what sets sort of the personality of the theme is definitely the character. So I'm, you know, I asked very early on for as much information about those two things as I can get, preferably visual. And then I typically start by writing themes for everything, which I'll do, you know, in a really crude fashion by just banging out stuff at the keyboard and humming into a, you know, singing into a handheld tape recorder.
Mm-hmm.
One of these days I'm going to get a handheld MP3 recorder, I suppose, but haven't gotten around to doing that yet. Actually, the fact that it's tape can sometimes come in handy, because sometimes I actually take those things with their, you know, they're really crappy. If I want to get sort of like a, once in a while I like to get sort of like a real lo-fi effect.
Mm-hmm.
I might actually take the stuff that I hummed into the tape recorder directly with all its wavy weirdness, and then record that into a file and then work with that. The main purpose of the tape recorder is simply to record tunes. The tunes I typically run by the project leader, the creative lead, whoever the creative lead is for the game, and, you know, get them to kind of sign off on this kind of personality, this kind of type, and then I will work that into kind of a little 15 or 30 second MIDI sketch, which again I will try to get a lot of. It's really important to get feedback from the project, because, you know, it's really about the game. It's really about what they have in mind. And, you know, it's really, as a composer, you want to make them happy. You want to get, because they understand the world, and you want them to you know, be behind the music that you're writing. Once I have about, you know, 15 or 30 seconds of music that is really happening for a particular situation, then I'll weave that out into the full minute and a half or 2 minutes or whatever,
right,
whatever it is. You know, these things tend to be fairly short.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they tend to be sort of short repeating pieces in most games. And then there are other things about the process, like depending on how interactive it is, there's certain compositional considerations. I also try to add as many live instruments as soon as possible. I do play a fair number of instruments, so like on both Psychonauts and Sly 2, which are my two most recent projects, I played a lot of instruments in those live. And where there's time and budget for it, I bring in live other live musicians who play things that I don't play, like trumpets and trombones and bass clarinets and things like that.
How did you
go ahead.
First become involved with the full game Full Throttle?
Before Full Throttle, actually, I think Sam & Max was the first game that we did the new system with between us composers. There were three of us sort of in those days in-house composers at LucasArts: Michael Land, myself, and Clint Bajakian. And Michael and I are both independent and also involved in a business venture, which is another story. And Clint is a music supervisor at Sony now.
Mm-hmm.
We were basically the trio of composers at LucasArts, and in the very early days, we actually worked on all the projects together and would just sometimes even trade the same piece of music back and forth. So it was very much a collaborative effort. And as we sort of got a sound and got used to how to score games. It was a very, you know, it was a pretty early days of doing game scoring, and those. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was before, you know, voice even. You know, we started to find our personalities, and at a point decided, well, for each project there would be a lead composer, and other guys might contribute, but the lead was really going to be responsible for the score.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first project that we did that with was Sam and Max, which was Clint's score, which I actually wrote several themes for, and a couple of pieces, but it was largely his score. Full Throttle, I think, was the next original title after Sam and Max, if memory serves me correctly. Mm-hmm. And that was, you know, we'd sort of, you know, looked at the projects that were coming down the pike and however it worked out. I think Mike had claimed dibs on The Dig, so I got Full Throttle, which was fine with me. I really wanted to. It was much more my personality to do Full Throttle, partly because, you know, I like rock and roll and I play in a rock band, and partly because I worked a little bit with Tim Schafer on Maniac Mansion 2.
Right.
And of course, we all had that was a shared score. But I really liked what Tim was doing, and it was really good to have an opportunity to actually work, you know, with him, you know, just as a team of director, game designer, and then the composer. There were a whole bunch of interesting things about Full Throttle. One is it was the first score we did at LucasArts that was original, that was not found music, you know, that was all digital.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an opportunity to do some very, very simple interactive music with digital music, and it was also an opportunity to go out and be an A&R guy and find bands, and I found one band that was particularly kind of hit the nail on the head. It was kind of a sign when I was driving to rehearsal, plugging in tape after tape after tape, of various bands that I'd gotten from, you know, references for from various places, and they were all just not happening. And then I plugged this one tape in, and I was like, oh, my God, that's exactly it. And I called this guy up, and he shows up at LucasArts on a bike with more material. I'm like, I have a feeling that this is the guy. And that was the Gone Jackals. That guy was Keith Karloff. That's kind of how that kind of came together. And then, you know, integrating the rock and roll with the sort of ambient score, which was really fun to do. And, you know, I had very sort of limited resources to work with. I think I had like one Proteus or something like that as my main, you know, and like a sound canvas as my composing, I didn't have like Digital Performer or Pro Tools or anything like that, so
right.
I couldn't really directly record stuff. It was like, you know, we were working on kind of a shoestring budget, but you know, given that, you know, I was able to get what I thought were some pretty interesting sounds, and that somehow, even though they were completely, you know, made from Proteus or whatever it was, that they somehow just worked with the rock and roll pretty well. That was 8-bit 11K. I can't remember if it was mono or stereo, but it was very, very low res.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was almost better for rock and roll, because it just there's something about that really low res sound that kind of pops out at you if you do certain things to it. So that's sort of how that came together.
Well, the music in Full Throttle is rooted in almost a bluesy western kind of style.
Yeah,
and you sort of chose that approach because of the Gone Jackals, or was that sort of established?
No, it was. I mean, it in essence the story is a western. You know, it's you see a scenery that looks like the West.
Yes,
there are. It's, you know, it's the West. You know, maybe it's a la Mad Max, you know.
Yes.
It's a very strong genre of it being a western. So I was thinking of Ry Cooder. I was thinking of Ennio Morricone. I was thinking a lot of these scores, like Morricone, for instance. Well, both those guys, when they do movies, they'll be just like a little gist, you know, like a little cha 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 cha. I mean. Tim used to imitate the score. He would imitate the score by going coo 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 cha 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 cha. Right. It's, oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
It was my little signature of Throttle sound. Was there'd always be some little, you know, echoing something, and you know, it's supposed to. Of course, you don't hear echoes in an open space, but strangely enough, echoes suggest an open space. You know, it's kind of a trick, kind of like the way the Patton score, you know, Jerry Goldsmith's score for Patton, which is, you know, so immortal. The way that evokes, you know, the call of battle on a great big field, you have that da 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 da, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't even think of that connection until now, but I'm sure that was in there. It's that, like, this idea of the lone, rugged hero warrior stepping out, you know, and all you see is his boot, and you're looking at, you know, infinite wasteland.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a very spare sound that you want with that. And that's right, I had the fake slide guitar in the beginning, which was very much... what was really fun was doing that stuff with live instruments later for Full Throttle 2, although that never saw the light of day.
Actually, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
But, let's talk about Full Throttle 2. Unfortunately, the game was never released, so you actually had a chance to use live instruments in that case?
Live instruments and some unbelievable musicians. Roy Rogers, who's... fantastic slide guitar player,
right.
Is with Bonnie Raitt, and he produced he's really best known for producing some of John Lee Hooker's very best records.
Mm-hmm.
And he played on the road with John Lee Hooker. I mean, this guy Roy he knows slide guitar, and so we just had this wonderful. I don't know. I hope they won't get mad at me over there at LucasArts for talking about this, just because they've got this wonderful score over there that's sitting in the can that I hope they do something with someday. You know, just has all this great stuff by Roy and different kinds of guitars, different amps. You know, we had this big. He plays through this very interesting combo of a Mesa Boogie Mark II or III. Hooked up with this giant Leslie speaker, if you can picture that. And then this little tiny Martin with silk and steel strings, but, you know, it's electrified. It's just a huge sound. So, we did a lot of stuff with that and some, you know, choice acoustic, you know, steel body guitars that he has and plays. And he's just such a fantastic player that it was a real joy to be able to hear all that stuff that had been, you know, kind of suggested in the Throttle 1 score,
mm-hmm.
on sort of the big stage, as it were.